And now we'll call upon our brother Levi to come forward to give his exhortation this morning. And he's entitled his talk, Tribes. Brother Levi.
Morning, everybody.
Good morning, Levi.
Again, it's a real treat to be with you all. Many of you know this, and if you don't, that's okay. It's not that important. But my parents started dating in 1984, 83, and my dad moved to the San Francisco area and attended the Belmont meeting. My mom, I guess, and then they got married, right? Then they got married. And then they lived together in Hayward for about a year and attended Belmont all that time. I'm repeating again, and everybody knows this, but Belmont at some point moved here, early 2000s? 2010, okay, moved to this building. And here we are today. I'm saying that because even though I have never attended this meeting, I've always felt a closeness being here. When I was asked to come, I said, of course, I'm happy to come. And we had multiple offers to stay. Please, you know, if you need place, please stay at our house, that's a beautiful thing. Wow, multiple people. Definitely makes us feel like we belong or in our welcome here. And that's a worthwhile introduction to my talk that I would say to others that I am from this tribe. I have a heritage here, and Jess and I and my children belong here. And I'm very thankful for that. There's a really fast, I was reading in a book called Tribes. We never checked this. I think it's Stephen Younger is the author. Stephen or Sebastian Younger? Sebastian. Okay. Jess and I were talking about it yesterday, and I should have checked it. In the beginning of that book, he tells the story, which is true in history, that at the time of white English settlers entering the colonies and killing and imprisoning and defeating in battle the Indian tribes, multiple times people are captured. So Indians would be captured and brought into Western white civilization. White people would be captured and brought into Indian tribal civilizations. And fascinatingly, there are 7,000 records in history of white individuals who were captured by the Indian tribes and then were recaptured and returned to their life in the tribe. So 7,000 historical instances of an individual who was taken by force by the Indians over a couple hundred years, returned, rescued, and then went back into tribal life. And there are zero examples of the reverse happening. No Indians who were ever captured and tried to be forced to assimilate into Indian tribal life, Indians tried to be forced to assimilate into white Western colonial life, ever stayed in historical record. 7,000 to zero. The book begins that way. It's a wonderful book, strong recommend, but then examines what was it about Indian tribal life that was so attractive to colonial settlers. He quotes one of them in the book. He quotes an individual who says that she felt more cared for and her social responsibilities were better shared, and she felt freer in tribal life. That whole construct really struck a chord in me personally. As I was reading that book, I was going through the heartbreaking experience many of you have of losing a very dear brother to me who felt that he no longer fit in our Christadelphian culture, our Christadelphian churches. He didn't belong in the body anymore. And I was able to say to him these actual words: I hear your theological argument, but you're leaving the tribe. And there's a difference. So I was trying to explain to him, I don't care, you know, I do care what you believe about what's said in here, but I also care about what you bring to me and my family and our group here culturally. And there's something there. And this is something, again, a thing I'm still exploring. This exhortation has some solutions, but I believe there must be more. There's something to being together and being in each other's business that's healthy and good. And we were commanded to meet together for a host of reasons. And it's been interesting, I think, especially in the last 3 years, figuring that out. Because as wonderful, by the way, as wonderful as it is to see some of the names that I see on the Zoom screen, I'm going to particularly say hi to my Aunt Judith, who's on there. Hello, I miss you. There's something doesn't work there. We need to figure out what it is. What is it that we were missing when Jess and I were in our living rooms, because we were shut down for the first year, and we log into the Zoom. You've all experienced this now. And yes, you hear the talk and you see the names and you see the list of people, but there was some emptiness. Something was missing. We all have different ideas. We all have different theories, and we all talked about it and have these different things. But I think we were commanded to meet together, and we are missing something when we don't. It just doesn't work perfectly. Zoom. It works. It doesn't work perfectly. We are bound by Christ, who we've committed to in our baptisms. We're bound by the statement of faith or Christadelphian beliefs. We share something unique and beautiful, right, in that. But we are also bound together by the human relations that we share and the benefits that we get from knowing each other and from hearing what's going on in your life. From having, to me, the classic example is moving. You have to pack all your stuff up and you got to move house. Well, who do you call? Right? Your tribe. That's the most basic one. I need help. I literally need arms and backs and bodies to help me move these boxes and move this stuff. And you go to church with me, so you got to come. Right? It's a family style relationship. That means, sorry, if you're able-bodied, you're responsible to help move me. And I think that's a simple example. I think there's many more practical examples of when we are required to show that familial love to each other. I have to feed you when you're hungry. That's what family means. You guys know, any of us who are parents, and especially you who are parents of adults, when the kids come back, you have to feed them. Like, you can't, you may say you can't live here anymore, but you really never can say the kitchen's closed to them. Like, that never outgrows. You are always responsible. At least, I don't have adult children, but I'm pretty sure you're always responsible to feed them. And that is beautiful, because your neighbors are not responsible to feed you, right? And I think our churches, our ecclesias should be like that. There's a responsibility to each other. We have this example in Acts 4:32, which kind of seems to be like the ideal ecclesia. You'll remember the verse when we get there. Acts 4:32. Reading this, and as I get older and more mature, this gets more and more, honestly, confusing. How would this even work? Okay, Acts 4:32. The practicality of this verse is not high. Now, the full number of those who believed were of one heart and soul, And no one said that any of the things that belonged to him was his own, but they all had everything in common. We try for that, but we're not even close to that. So that ecclesia, in the first Jerusalem ecclesia, had everything in common. So how do we get there? I think there's three steps. There's three levels of interaction in a tribe or a family that I think we each need to take personally. The first one is to be vulnerable yourself. So you as an individual need to be able to say to your church, your ecclesia, your family, when you need help. James 5:16, therefore confess your sins one to another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous person has great power as it was working. We read that. We understand that. We have to confess our sins to each other. We have to let each other know when we're falling down. 2 Corinthians 6, this one's beautiful. Let's turn, this is less common. So 2 Corinthians 6, and there's an attitude, there's specific wording here in the ESV that's quite pretty. 2 Corinthians 6:11. Beginning at 11, we have spoken freely to you. This is Paul, spoken freely to you, Corinthians. Our heart is wide open. You are not restricted by us, but you are restricted in your own affections. It's your own thinking that's closing you. In return, and I speak as to children, widen your hearts also. Widen your hearts also. Open yourself to your community. In Galatians 6, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. This is the concept that we need to be open with each other. We need to open our hearts and open our weaknesses. We can't always, I think in our culture, in my culture I grew up in my tribe, it's a lot easier for me to say, I am here to help you. If you need something, I'm here. It's harder for me to say, I need help. It's a lot harder. I don't know what that is. White, Western, affluent California. Is that? I don't know what that is. It's hard for me to say I need help. It's definitely hard. It's even harder for me to say, I'm really messing up and I'm bad at this thing. I've got a big problem. I don't do that, actually. I don't think I've said that. And I probably should. This is an exhortation to me, this, that I need to open my heart also. That to me is the first level. That us as individuals need to be opening up to each other. If there is a reason that you're not attending when you could be, if there's a reason that you're saying no to the thing when you want to say yes, if there's something that's preventing you from being as involved as you would like to be, we're commanded to open our hearts. Okay, so that's the first, that would be ideal. We should all start there. And that's hard. So that's one idea. Second idea now is the rest of us are listening and want to help. We skip the first step. Like I just described, I skip the first step. I go straight to, hey, I'm here to help you. Let me know. I'll be right over it. I don't share with you when I need help, but I'm here to help you. Empty. We're listening. We want to help. We are humble. We're free of judgment. And working, and I'm ready to work with you to improve. So love is shown, right? We need to be ready to show love in the First Corinthians sense. Love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, does not boast. It is not proud. I'll keep going. It does not dishonor others, it's not self-seeking, it's not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. So now I am ready. When my brothers and sisters say they need help, to say, I'm here for you. I've messed up too. I've made mistakes too. I've needed help too in the past. And I'm ready. Let's do whatever this thing we need to do. Okay. That's the second level of a tribe. The third level is when I'll forgive you when you fail me. And this, I think, is where I've seen permanent rift and damage. Is I was open to you. I asked for help. You failed me. We actually failed at step two. We didn't help them. in the way that they needed or that they wanted. We judged them. We kept record of wrongs. We didn't forget this. We didn't act humbly and recognize that we also are sinners and make mistakes. And now I am hurt and I'm gone. And what the ultimate command, I think, to the tribe is that when you get hurt by people failing to help you correctly, you stay. Because that is what family does. That is solidarity and trust and assumption that think it's going to be okay. This is still my place. I still belong to this tribe. That is, how do we teach that? Right? And how do we as individuals remember that? That yes, my tribe doesn't always help me as they should. There's an ideal that we don't reach, but it exists and we're trying to reach it. We fail sometimes, but we know that it'll get better. And that is a true healthy family as well, right? In our small individual family groups, when we make mistakes, this is a silly example, but it's this morning, we were getting ready to come to here and we're cleaning up our room, and Jess had a cup of tea that she was very excited about. She set it down on the floor. I came in with the baby. She said, "Don't kick over the cup of tea, it's on the floor." I changed the baby, I turned right around, walk out and kick that cup of tea like clear across the floor. And that's why we were a few minutes late today. And I am so thankful that Jess immediately forgives that, because we have a high level of commitment to each other, right? I am an ogre who will kick your tea off the floor. That's a known fact. You warned me anyways. Right, she knew it was a risk, and she knew that she was going to forgive me if that happened, and she did wonderfully. That's forbearance. It's mentioned only a few times in the Bible, but I forgive you ahead of time. It's forbearance. God forbears us in Romans 8. He has forbearance for us. That is what makes a tribe, is when I recognize that you will fail me and we're still going to be okay, because next time you won't, or because we're called for each other, or because I fail people too. It's a humility and a equality and a trust level that we need to get to. And it's so hard, because it's easy for Jess and I, who are married to each other, to forbear each other. Even then, as humans, we don't always do that. We all know this, but just, I kicked a cup of tea. Imagine I do something way worse, right? It has to be more than that. Now, I'm exhorting all of us that we increase our forgiveness and humility and protection of each other. There, I don't want to allow a cycle of abuse. So if there is a line too far where you repeatedly forgive someone who repeatedly hurts you. Obviously, at some point, there's a line there, to be clear. But we also are commanded, I think, to love each other in a patient way. And that is even after we have been vulnerable, the other person has tried to help and failed us, hurt us further. And now we find the way to forbear that. So again, I don't have the answers, but this is a constant effort thing. But Jesus, when he washed his disciples' feet, and we're nearing the end of my thoughts today, but John 17, if you think about Jesus is there washing the disciples' feet, and one thing he knows as he's washing them is that Judas is going to betray him. He knows that when he's sitting there washing their feet, and still he's on his knees washing the disciples' feet, knowing that one of them is going to betray him. So that's the example for us. Let's look at 17 verse 21. That they may all be one, just as you, Father, are in me. This is his prayer, and I in you, that they also may be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. The glory that you have given me, I have given to them, that they may be one even as we are one. I and them and you and me, and that they may become perfectly one, so that the world may know that you sent me and loved them even as you loved me. That the love that God and Jesus share is the love that we should share with each other. Jesus sacrificed himself for his friends. Greater love hath no man than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. That's what we remember with this bread and wine. So we need to get here. We need to push ourselves to that point, to open ourselves up, to be truly, humbly helpful when we are opened up to, and then to forgive our brothers and sisters when we are not helped. We need to love each other continually, bearing each other's burdens. And when we fail each other, we need to forgive and keep going and stay. We're called to be a family and a tribe. I'll close with John 13:34. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another just as I have loved you. You also are to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love one for another.